It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Another week has gone by. How are you guys doing? Jim, you're sporting your Lex Luthor look now. What's that all about?
Yeah, I went all Britney Spears this weekend and shaved my head. I mean, I didn't shave it like with a razor shave, but I just got out the buzzer and was just like, let's just see how this looks. I'm home for the week. You know, by the time I get back to work next Monday, if I wanted it to grow just enough to, you know, not be bald, then it would be enough. But I actually really like it. I met some friends for brunch yesterday and they really liked it. So I think it's here to stay. Basically, this is just like a half guard on a buzzer, and I did it myself. And so basically, I've paid for my last haircut. I'm at that point in my life. I've paid for my last haircut.
You're starting to look like an angry baby, though. This doesn't work out right. Come on, man.
I think it makes me look younger.
It does.
I've been at that point for a few years now, Jim. I take that back. Occasionally, I will go get my hair cut at, there's like a little beauty teaching school nearby, and it's only like $6 to get your hair cut. But most of the time, I'm like you. I don't even use a guard. I just, you know, straight on the wall buzzers, and it all goes off.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure about.
I know our listeners can't see mine, but mine's either like this or like rock and roll, you know, past the shoulders length.
Brad and I are the only ones rocking the luxurious locks.
You know, I wasn't sure if I would go like to no guard or not, so I went ahead and just put the shortest guard I had on there. Well, maybe I'll go from there. I see y'all playing with your damn hair.
Yeah, that's my problem, is when I even try and let it grow out, I've still got about 65 to 70% bald. So it look to me, my hair looks worse when it's not cut super short than when I'm, you know, actually growing some in.
I tell you what, this is a gross old man thing, but if the hair on my head grew like the hair on my nose, I would have like hair down to my butt. I mean, it would just be beautiful, dark, strong hair and grow really fast.
And very coarse.
I believe it was Dennis Miller who said, as you get older, your hair migrates from the downtown area out to the suburbs of your ears, nose, shoulders, and back. So I believe he is correct on that.
Yeah, I never had chest or back hair either, and that's finally happening. So I'm hitting like second puberty in my 40s.
You're turning into a silverback gorilla now.
Yeah, I got a little George the Animal Steel going on my back right now.
Tor Johnson.
Rugback Ron.
Wow. And with that, we just shed listeners like we're shedding hair. Nah, it's all good. All right, let's jump into this. So apparently people had their Echo Dots and Echoes just going off with weird, creepy laughter at strange times. Did this happen to any of you guys?
I don't think mine's ever done it, unless it has, and I just haven't noticed it. I feel like I would notice that, though, if it was being creepy.
I use my Dots all the time when I'm at home, and I've never heard this, so I think it's kind of weird.
Yeah, so I read in the article where it says that I guess there's a skill called Laugh, and you can tell it Amazon device Laugh, and it will laugh for you. So it's been getting false positives. So what they've done is now they've set it up to where you say, hey, Amazon device, can you laugh? And then that's what invokes it. For me, though, I've got to go on another rant for a second. I am literally about to sell all my Amazon Echoes. I am done with them. Because I've been home, you know, post-op surgery for 4 weeks now, I hear how frequently they pick up for just no reason at all, all the time. And it drives me batty. And sometimes one of the things that I'll do is I'll actually go back and like rewind the DVR and play that same 10 seconds and see if there was anything that remotely sounded like a trigger word, and it won't re-trigger it. So, you know, these things are just setting off randomly all day, every day. I would say that just between the two that I've got downstairs, I've had probably 15 to 18 interactions with it today of just nobody saying anything, and you hear it go off.
You know, I've got to echo those sentiments a little bit because, no pun intended. But yeah, I do see mine pick up quite a bit. And just out of frame, or maybe in frame, I don't know if you guys can see, I do have a couple of the cloud cams in Amazon sells. And just for grins and giggles, just for a creepy factor, you can actually use your Echo to tell the camera to turn on, but I could not make it go off. That creeped me out quite a bit as well. I've been setting these up strategically, like to watch, you know, doors and windows and just for fun. I was like, you know, I bet that drop-in type feature works. So I'd tell it, hey, you know, turn the camera on, and you do it. And I'd be like, okay, now turn this camera off. And it would go, sorry, I can't do that. You can try hiding it. And I'm like, okay, hide camera. I don't know what you're talking about. So it's great at turning things on, not so great at turning things off.
As soon as Brian starts getting dressed, the Echo starts going, boom, chicka-wawa.
I heard the Echo throw open its mouth a little bit. I've been, you know, this is a nice segue into something that I've been planning on playing with just a little bit. Because we all know that our favorite personal assistant kind of stinks. You know, Siri just hasn't been that great. But honestly, I haven't been that impressed with the Echo either lately. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But I've decided to put all of those assistants on my phone and put them in my start location or in my launcher so that I can just throughout the week, if I would normally ask Siri to do something, I'm going to ask one of the other three assistants to do it and just see how often it seems to work pretty well. I'm going to do this over the next couple of weeks and then report back.
Other three?
So we got Google's assistant. We've got the Amazon assistant, who I shall not speak its name. And Cortana would be the other assistant.
Oh, okay. I didn't know who the third one was. Okay. That Microsoft chick.
Somewhere, someone at Microsoft is weeping. I don't think they should have named it after the AI that was in the Halo games, but, you know, that's just me. And I say that as a big fan of the Halo games. However, I have been trying these out over the last few days. I mean, again, this weekend I didn't have a lot of time, but I've been playing with it a little bit. And I saw a tweet the other day by Benedict Evans on Twitter where he was talking about, he retweeted someone else. They asked Siri, what was the flight time between, you know, San Francisco and Las Vegas? And it would give you the drive time instead. I thought, huh, that's really weird. So I asked Siri that, got the same thing. Then I did it through Google, Amazon, and Cortana. All three of them got it right. And I'm just kind of like, ugh, this sucks so bad. But we're gonna try that and just see, you know, maybe 1 week I'll do everything through Cortana that I can, or 1 week I'll do everything through Amazon's, or 1 week I'll do everything through Google's assistant and see how good the results are. We know who's going to come in dead last, but hey, I'll try it anyway and just sort of see. I was playing with Cortana a little bit, and I got to say, it's not bad. It actually gets a lot of things right. It's unfortunate they don't really have a platform that can show it off. I mean, you know, Google owns their phones. Amazon owns their tablets and devices. Nobody's really using Microsoft's outside of the PC. Every time I use Windows 10, it has the little Cortana thing at the bottom. Ask me anything.
That's the first thing I do is turn that off in Windows 10.
Well, to be fair, you turn off Siri too, so I mean, eh.
I use Siri some. But I love my Echo Dots. I mean, I have a couple.
You mean your Spotify devices?
Spotify devices. I turn lights on and off with them. So I've got a couple of lamps on it now. I did have the kitchen lights behind me on it, but I realized where the kitchen lights are, it was a lot easier to actually just flip the switch than to ask her to turn them on and off. Like, I just wanted to flip the switch. But where the lamps are, it's a perfect ask of turning the lamps on and off, because trying to get to where, you know, like the button on the floor to turn on the one lamp, or the lamp in my bedroom.
Lean over a corner of a couch or
yeah,
something like
those
that.
Those are in good spots. So, and I still haven't put my Rope LED lights back up in the whole apartment, but those will be on a plug switch too. So
speaking of that Amazon assistant, one of the things that has really sort of vexed me about this forever is wanting to play our podcast through the Amazon devices. And from day one, our podcast has been available in TuneIn and Stitcher. And I have both the TuneIn skill installed, the Stitcher skill installed, and even a skill called AnyPod. None of them will play our podcast. Not a single one, no matter what I do. And this goes back to the problem that I've had with these, where getting syntax exactly right is extremely frustrating on those devices. I know you guys don't seem to have that problem, but I've seen other people online, including folks like Gruber, have it. And it's like, you know, being an old school Linux guy, it feels like I'm trying to do a command line invocation of something with the right switches to get into something.
You're forgetting the switch.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, he's like, hey, lady, open Pixelmator.
it was Pixelmator.
Is that what it is? Okay, yeah.
I used to have the skill installed, and I still do, where I can crank my car with my Echo Dot, and that doesn't work anymore for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Crank it up or crank up the stereo? Yeah.
I use mine for things other than music. So I would tell it, crank my car, and it wouldn't do it, which was really cool in the summer, no pun intended, where I could use the little portable version of the Amazon assistant when I'm getting ready to leave, crank it up and have it, you know, cooled off on that hot parking lot in the Georgia heat when I walk outside so that I could get into a cool vehicle. And that doesn't work anymore. I couldn't get our podcast to play for anything. Meanwhile, with Google, one time I tried it, it didn't work. After that, it worked every single time. And of course, the HomePod has no problems with it whatsoever. I mean, I know those are little things, but the things that I want to use it for, I don't want to have to cast a spell to actually get the thing to work. I mean, I should be able to use some sort of natural language and get it to work, and it seems to work better than the others in some cases, but you have to be syntactically correct far more than you probably should. It's still not a natural experience.
Come on, Hermione. We all know you're the smartest witch of her age.
I was waiting for the Harry Potter.
It's Leviosa.
There we go. I was waiting for the Harry Potter stuff to come out. So there's an article that we're going to link to where one of the co-founders of Siri had suggested that Apple was looking for a level of perfection that they can't get with an assistant. And I would agree. And if you read this article, what was really nice was the original purpose for Siri when that company developed it was you could go to the airport and if it knew your flight was delayed, it would start looking for alternate ways for you to get home on its own. It's like, my God, we're like 6 years into Siri and we still don't have that functionality. What happened?
She can't even tell you how long it takes to get from point A to point B, much less find alternate ways.
Well, she can, but not the right way that you asked. Like, you know, I want to know what the flights are like. It'll take you 5 hours to drive. It's like, no, it's not what I asked at all.
I had a problem a couple weeks ago with Google Maps on my phone. Somehow it got locked into walking places, and I could not figure out for the life of me how to tell it, I want the directions in a car. I don't want the directions walking. I could not find in there where, you know, to tell it, I want to drive this distance. And it was just the most annoying thing. I forget what I ended up doing.
This was in Google Maps, you said?
Yeah, in Google Maps on my phone. I had used it walking at some point, you know, probably somewhere here downtown to go from, you know, someplace new or something. And I just couldn't figure out how to get it to go back to, I want to get there in a car, please.
I'll have to agree with that sentiment. The user interface for Google Maps on iOS is pretty awful. I mean, it is very, very much not intuitive. And that's singularly the reason why I don't use it. I think sometimes it's probably got better data and, you know, it's definitely more data dense in certain areas where you get a ton more info about what's around, especially in pretty dense metropolitan areas. But the UI for it and navigating through it is just, it's not very intuitive at all.
I really prefer Google Maps in cities that I'm not familiar with because I think it does have the best point of interest database and finding things and finding what you're looking for. For local stuff, I've actually switched over to Apple Maps for about the last 2 to 3 weeks. I think we talked about this on the podcast about the whole how each of them were estimating how long something would take to get there. So I just switched to Apple Maps that week, put it on my front page of my phone, and I've been pretty pleased with it so far. You know, as far as I think it's doing great around town now. I think, you know, every now and then there'll be a closed road that Waze would have probably picked up on just because of the social aspect of, you know, people seem to tell Waze things or have the ability to tell Waze, you know, hey, this is closed. And if a bunch of people tell them that, they actually adjust it in the maps, where I don't think that's occurring quite as often with Apple yet.
Yeah, let me second that for a minute. So the thing that I found frustrating about Apple Maps most recently was I was downtown in Atlanta and I was trying to get to a place that I'd never been before. Sometimes it will lead you to a place and tell you to park your car and walk. So I was trying to get to this place and Apple Maps navigated me to the neighborhood behind it that was inaccessible to the place that I was going. And it said, park your car and walk half a mile. And it's like, no, this is not how you get there from here. So I've had that happen on more than one occasion where it just gets completely confused, sends me to the wrong place, but within walking distance, and then tells me to hoof it instead of just taking me to where I'm supposed to go.
That's the built-in fill in your rings feature, Brian, where it's like it wants you to fill in your rings. So go park about a half a mile from where I tell you to, you tell me you want to go, and then I'm going to make you walk a little bit to help out your health for the day.
I think that's it.
That's a feature, not a bug.
One thing that still annoys me about Apple Maps, though, is I have reported the same couple of intersections for a couple of years, and they still haven't fixed it. So the two that I'm talking about in particular, both of them are four-way stops. But when you're at the four-way stop, if you're going to go straight across, it's kind of like a catty-cornered. So it tells you to turn right and then turn left to end up on the same road that you're on. But if you turned right, you're turning onto a different road that's going to take you. So it's like it wants you to turn right for 20 feet and then turn left to get back on the same road. So I could understand it having a problem, like if the roads change names there or whatever, but it's not a, you know, it's not a symmetrical four-way stop kind of intersection. And so there's two of them in Metro Atlanta that, again, after reporting the intersection as being bad and, you know, writing no updates in years.
I do wonder sometimes if they look at, even if it's not personalized, if they look in aggregate of how often they give you directions and how often people disregard them and do something else and then make adjustments accordingly. You think that would be something that they would collect, something of value.
I've seen stories where Waze definitely does that. Like, it tries to learn from users in areas where it may not have as much data. And so it if it continually says go this way and users continually ignore their directions and go a different way, you know, that it's their algorithm or whatever is smart enough to, I don't know if it changes on its own, but at least maybe raises some red flag where some, you know, administrator / you know, editor goes in and says, okay, you know, what are we telling people? What are people doing? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, go ahead and update that in the, you know, the AI or whatever, and do it. So I've definitely seen stories about how Waze does that. It tries to learn from users on local roads, especially.
Well, one thing that Waze does really well that I've had no other navigation app do, they know where all these industrial parks are that have entrances on, say, two major ingress and egress roads. I have never had Apple Maps or Google Maps or anything ever kind of divert me through an industrial park to get from point A to point B, but Waze does it frequently in my neck of the woods. And these are places that I never even knew existed. And I'll be running, you know, when everybody else is running 10 miles an hour and bumper to bumper, I'm running 45 for like 6 miles and not encountering a car. And then I'm just completely amazed when I get to where it is that I come out, that I just cut out like 40 minutes worth of traffic.
I had a situation a couple of weeks ago on a early on a Sunday morning when I went down to Banjo Coffee here in Atlanta. And that's way downtown, a long way from where I am. And I was on my way back, and I guess the interstate was closed, and Waze was just not having it. It's like, you need to get on right here to get where you're going to get back to your house. And at least I was able to say, no, I can't, it's closed, and put the road closure in and watch it divert me somewhere else. I don't even know that I could do that inside of Apple Maps. Is that possible? I don't think it is.
I mean, back to Jason's point, since Waze is a crowdsourced type data, and then, you know, you can actually go into their website, I think, and edit maps. I mean, maybe somebody went in and added that as a alternate route for that particular thoroughfare that people were, you know, doing 10 miles an hour through, you know, even though it's not technically meant to be driven on like a road. You know, some people, or even just one person, has gone in there and be like, well, I'll just use this and this will be my new route. And then he uses it every day on his commute or something.
Well, remember we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, how they were routing people through a small town in like Jersey when the bridges got backed up there in the Jersey Turnpike / New York area. Yeah. And how this town was like imposing like a, you can't drive through our town without a sticker or we're going to give you a ticket law. I guess I need to go back and do a follow-up and check and see whatever happened with that.
So in the case of the New Jersey town, I have no sympathy for them because you shouldn't be able to tell people you can't drive on public streets. In Jason's particular case, if he's cutting through industrial parks, those are private property.
No, I mean, these are all public streets.
Are they?
Yeah, it's never, well, I take that back. One time near our old campus in Norcross, it had me go through what I perceived as the parking lot of this one company, but then come to find out the front of that parking lot was actually a county road. So it has never actually had me go through private property to get somewhere. It's always been on an actually, you know, marked named road.
Weird.
Very cool.
Well, there was a 15-minute rabbit hole down some road that we got lost on.
Google has announced Android P, their new version of Android that'll be coming out. And lo and behold, there will be support for iPhone X style notches. And, you know, it's funny that a little over a week ago, Samsung mocked the notch on the S9 launch. And yet here, all these companies, it's weird. They all do this. They all like will mock what Apple does. And then a couple months later, just shamelessly do the same thing. Isn't that a little strange?
I thought all the Androids were named after like candy bars or
desserts,
things to eat. Yeah, desserts. What, Android P? That doesn't sound like a dessert to me.
maybe P is the code name, and it won't actually come up with a dessert name for it yet.
Maybe if you're R. Kelly, I don't know.
I was waiting on that. Normally it takes them a while to come up with the. And I'm sure that they'll come up with some sort of thing, right?
Or did Popsicle.
Did they drop that all together? I mean, I thought they were doing. There was nougat and Oreo and
ice cream. I don't know. They've had a bunch of different ones. I just, when you I read that in the show notes earlier, and I legitimately thought I thought they did, you know, sugary sweets or whatever. And I guess they've gotten away from that now, or either maybe that's, they all have an internal name that's like that, and that's what we used to always hear. But now this is like the, I don't know. They can't be like Apple and just go 8, 9, 10, 11. They, you know, it's now it's P, so next year is going to be Android Q.
Well, they only get 26 releases, and they have to come up with something else. So
AA and BB. And
it'll be hexadecimal releases, you know, A0 and whatnot.
For real, though, we saw this with, you know, when the headphone jack went away, all the manufacturers were, that's ridiculous. We'll never do that. And then you start seeing the next year, the next cycle of phone releases, all of a sudden headphone jacks start disappearing. You see the notch, and, you know, there was lots of jokes about the notch. And now all of a sudden, it's just a guess that they're saying that the Pixel 3 is likely to have a notch. It just seems strange to mock something every time they make a design choice and then shamelessly rip it off most of the manufacturers. Even though the S9 won't have one, the iPhone 10 is still beating it in benchmarking tests, and their 2D facial recognition still sucks, so they still can't rely on that for financial transactions. So yeah, take that.
It's not just the iPhone 10 that's beating it. The iPhone 8 is crushing it.
Well, they basically have the same CPU, so that's
right. What I was gonna say. It's okay, it's not just beating it, it's crushing it. I mean, just the,
if you look at the tests, it was crazy how much faster.
Yeah,
because normally when these things happen, I look at them and I go, okay, one's slightly faster than the other. Okay, I get it. This one was demonstrably faster. It was kind of like, wow, I can't believe that this is that they're happy with this, that they're releasing something that's being beat by a phone that's 6 months old now. Well, almost 6 months old.
The iPhone 7 is actually running very close to the numbers that the S9 is.
That's what happens when you're beholden to someone else for your CPU.
I think I've said this before on the podcast, that I don't think Apple gets near enough credit for their CPU work that they've done over the last 3 to 4 years. I mean, because they started from scratch on these a couple of years ago and have really come so far with their system on a chip and the way their processors work. I mean, the, you know, designed specifically for the phone processors. I mean, they ramped up quickly and then they just kept flying, because they're just, you know, like Jason said, you know, it's the sevens are keeping up with the S9s. You know, those are a couple of years old now. So, I mean, it's just a big difference.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to the day, and that day is going to probably be couple years out on the horizon, but I'm going to look forward to owning an iPhone that is 100% Samsung free.
You know, Apple's working on that. I got to say, though, Samsung makes good components and they make them at scale, so that's the challenge.
I mean, if we were mining Bitcoin on our phone, we'd all be running iPhones, right?
It did pain me recently to buy a Samsung refrigerator, but it was super cool and looked good, and it's been doing a great job for us the past week. So
they make decent appliances. Can't knock that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it keeps your beer cold. That's important, but, you know.
It can post to Twitter when you need something else, you know, or whatever the Wi-Fi that you have on there. And your fridge does have Wi-Fi, right?
And the dishwasher.
We're getting closer to the sentient machines that are just going to take over or get hacked. And then
I'm just thinking Amazon's going to have, like, a fridge with all of their stuff built in to where it can actually detect, you know, you're almost out of milk, we're going to order you some more milk. Or you're almost out of cheese or bacon or whatever else.
I would buy into that monitor. Yes,
it monitors the contents of your fridge and reorders for you whenever you're ready. You know, or just have like the dash buttons built into the LED on the front of the fridge to where, you know, that's the first step is, okay, I'm about out of milk. You just hit the button on there and it orders it. But eventually it'll actually be able to, you know, tell that you're running out of a product, and it goes ahead and replaces that order for you. I've been using Amazon Fresh for the last 2 months now. I guess last month is when I started traveling less, so traveling every other week instead of every week. So it actually made it worth it, because I know I'll get at least 2 shipments a month from Amazon Fresh on my weeks when I'm going to be home. So I just start a cart and add to it all week long as I think of stuff that I want / need. And then right before I'm going to be home on Thursday night, I'll schedule delivery on Friday or Saturday, and I get all my groceries and I have them for the whole week. So, you know, I got all kind of good stuff to make this week. I looked up some Instapot recipes and ordered some different stuff, and trying to eat at home a little more while I'm at home. Eat at home while I'm home. So the fresh is nice. And plus, I have a really small car now, so I can't get a whole lot of groceries in the trunk.
Yeah, for somebody who lives downtown, that would be far more useful for you than some of us suburb dwellers. Though I do use Instacart and Prime now probably more than I should when I'm just feeling kind of lazy and don't want to. Because I go to the store pretty frequently to get stuff to make dinner for my wife. But oftentimes, I don't know, I balk at paying that delivery fee. Though now that Amazon does the deliveries from Whole Foods with no shipping charge, that's kind of interesting. Because normally I don't shop at Whole Foods, I'll be honest. But, I could see myself picking some of that stuff from Prime now just to get it so I don't have to go to the store. That'd be fine with me.
I've been really impressed with Fresh. I'm adding a little more to my repertoire as I, order every week. And it's really nice. It'll actually say, hey, this is stuff you've previously ordered. Do you want to order it again? So I can just kind of quickly ramp up my list of what I want for the week. So that's nice, because I'm kind of getting into a habit. Okay, this is what I'm going to eat. This is what I'm going to eat. And so that's why I tried to look up some Instapot recipes and try to do some different stuff this week. I made a pot of chili yesterday that I'll ate on yesterday, and I've been eating on all day today. And then I got a recipe for a baked potato soup that sounded really good that I'm going to try one day this week.
I ran into our mutual friend Jason at the gym yesterday, and he was selling me on the virtues of the Instant Pot as well, telling me I had to get one.
They are pretty outstanding. We love ours. We don't have the actual Instant Pot brand though. I think ours is kind of one of the fancier ones that I think we got from Sur La Table. I know I'm a fancy man.
Well,
anyhow, it's really nice, and we use the daylights out of it. I mean, it really can cut down tremendously on the amount of time that you cook stuff, and what comes out of it is absolutely just amazing.
I cook in that Instant Pot and my George Foreman grill more than I use my microwave, stovetop, or oven, if you don't count frozen pizzas in the oven. I am a single man, so... But, I use that George Foreman grill all the time for meat, because I like the taste of it grilled on there versus, doing it on the stovetop. So that's how I cook almost all my meat at home, is using that George Foreman grill, and then Instant Pot for just about everything else.
Fun fact, I have grilled lobster tails on my George Foreman, and it comes out great if you do it right. So I will speak to that. I mean, it doesn't get enough. I know it's looked upon as like a cheesy device to cook things on, but it actually works really well.
Well, Kate and I have been rewatching seasons of The Office in order, and we just came across the where he cooked his foot on the George Foreman
because he wanted bacon in the morning.
Yeah. And so my wife's been playing nurse to me for weeks now with my foot injury, and so it was kind of nice to be able to say, see, at least I'm not as bad as him.
Yeah, we did something real interesting a couple weekends ago on the George Foreman. We took asparagus and sprinkled some olive oil and Parmesan cheese on the asparagus, and just put a bunch of it in the grill and closed it up and just cooked that asparagus on the grill. I was amazed how well it tasted. It came out great.
That's one of our staples when we cook steaks, is I'll either, we have one of those, I guess it's sort of like a tray or a pan, but it has holes all in it that you would maybe cook fish in or something. It's a basket, if you will. And I'll just line it with foil and put like corn cobs in it or asparagus or whatever, and put olive oil and Parmesan on it. It's great. And a little Cavender's seasoning. If you're not privy to that, go grab that. It's great.
Well, I'll have to try that.
So thanks. As we transition into a cooking show for just a moment, let me give you a variation on that I'm fond of. It's cheddar roasted broccoli, where you take a baking sheet And you do something similar. You take florets of broccoli, you paint it with a little bit of olive oil, you put some panko breadcrumbs on it and some shredded cheddar cheese on it, and bake it for 15 minutes, sort of turn them over and do another 15 minutes. You get baked broccoli with breadcrumbs and cheese and olive oil. It is fantastic. It'll knock your socks off, and it's very, very good.
That sounds great. I was never, growing up and most of my adult life, I would say, I never ate asparagus or broccoli until I grew up with my grandmother, and anytime she cooked anything like that, it was mushy and in like a soup or a casserole or something like that. Once I discovered the baking or grilling of all of these vegetables, I actually like them that way. I'll eat grilled squash or grilled asparagus or grilled broccoli or just steamed broccoli with some flavor on it. But, you know, I grew up with like everything was in a casserole, all mushy with cream of chicken soup in it when veggies like that were cooked. And
same
so
here.
I just didn't like that.
Or boiled.
Didn't like
it's,
that.
It's amazing how good veggies can be if you maintain some sort of the structure of the vegetable, you know, the actual crunchy part of the vegetable, and not cook them to death.
Exactly.
Let me endorse something for me. Let's bring this back to iOS for just a moment. There's a recipe manager called Paprika on iOS and Mac. It's a little bit pricey. I think the iOS app maybe $10. Maybe the Mac app is like $20 or something. It's one of those where you pay for separate apps. I use it all the time. I will go. It has a built-in browser. You can find recipes. It'll automatically clip them, parse them, and it you'll have them forever, and you can generate shopping lists from the recipes. So yesterday when I was doing some shopping, I had a whole bunch of things in there that I was going to make for my wife. I scanned through them, picked three or four for the week, maybe five, and just hit, you know, make a grocery list out of this, and it takes every component, throws it into a list, and shows you what each thing you're buying is for. So sometimes you'll get duplicates, like, you know, one of the things I was making had like a low-fat yogurt base or something, so it had it twice in there, but you just kind of roll with it and go, okay, I need to make sure I get this much. But great app. I use it every week for plotting what the menu is going to be for the week, and I've used a lot of those recipe managers. I think Pepper Plate was the one I used to use most often, but Paprika 3, just I think it had a new version recently. Wonderful, wonderful app.
I paid for that a long time ago, back when I, you know, just basically was experimenting with all kind of apps, but I, you know, at some point it got dropped off a phone and I had totally forgotten about it. I'll have to go back and see if I've paid for whatever the latest version is.
It is really good. The built-in browser, and going to something like foodnetwork.com or whatever recipe site, like I've most of them it handles just fine. And it'll automatically parse it, automatically bring it in, and gets rid of all the ads and cruft, and you just have plain text of here's the picture, here's the recipe, here's the directions, there you go. And it's...
Yeah, we use AnyList, and it'll do that also.
But it also does to-do stuff, right?
Yes, it's not solely that, but...
It does AnyList.
but it has a built-in like recipe calendar, so you can meal plan, and a recipe browser, so you can add in recipes. So I've created a whole Instant Pot category within that.
Can you share that stuff?
I think so.
I might have to do some recipe swapping.
I've got some killer Instant Pot recipes. Seriously.
I've been planning to go down the Instant Pot route, so maybe I'll definitely hit you up for those. I also can share mine through Paprika, so if you still own that, Jim, that would be a good thing.
Good
too.
Deal. Like I said, I'm trying to cook more at home. Part of it is, you know, I'm trying to eat a little bit better, and I've lived downtown for 3 years now, and so not that there's not good food downtown. I'm kind of tired of the same stuff. And I don't want to go get my car and go anywhere else, so I'm just trying to eat a little more here.
Also, cooking can be a fun activity, too, and it gives you something to do without... You know, for me, it's like a distraction of where I can do something creative, turn off my mind, and just sort of have fun and do something and have something to show for it at the end. So that's also a nice aspect.
And everyone in your family's like, Brian, this is great. This is great. And you feel like Robin puffing out your chest.
Well, you would think so, but they never had to cook for a finicky audience like I do. So
my other issue is if I'm eating any place, you know, nicer downtown, like nicer than like Witch or Jimmy John's, like a, you know, nicer place, if I'm eating, I'm also going to order a drink. I'm going to get a beer or some sort of drink down here. And so doing it at home, I don't drink as much either. So
all right, so let's bring it back. We'll have another tie into food.
Where were we in the show notes?
I don't know, man. We went from Android P into Instant Pot, I believe it was where we went. So Apple filed a patent this week for a crumb-resistant keyboard. Hey, that's still food-related, right?
God bless Apple, because they've screwed up this current round of keyboards. Maybe they can bring it back to somewhere.
So if you look at the design, it's really cool. It's like there's little air bladders underneath the keys that expel things. So that would be a really nice thing. Are you guys like me where you've eaten over your keyboard enough? Like, I don't do this much anymore, but that is a disgusting habit. And when you shake the thing out and stuff falls out and you're like, oh my God, this is the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
I never made a habit of that ever. I just wasn't one to eat over my keyboard. And I remember being in the corporate world and being in the IT support and going to someone's desk and just being absolutely disgusted because there wouldn't be like Cheeto dust on the keys, but there'd be something dried on the keys, you know. And I mean, I used to be, I'm sure, the weirdest Asperger's type guy in IT, because I would walk around with alcohol swabs and Purell in my pocket. So I'd go to work at somebody's desk. They'd stand up so I could tap on the keys or whatever it is I needed to do. And as soon as I'd stand up, you know, they'd say, well, what was wrong? And they'd want some simplistic explanation of it. And as I start to explain, I pull the Purell out of my pocket and start to put it on my hands, you know, generously. Or I would take an alcohol swab out of my pocket and like clean their keyboard off before I would actually touch their keyboard, all while they're watching me do this.
I'm sure with you. I find using other people's keyboards disgusting, only because I know how bad mine was, so I can only imagine how bad other people's were. Just, no.
It's a horrible habit for me. I do it all the time. Every single day, I get to working, and especially working from home, I fix a plate or fix something, and I sit right back down in front of my computer, keep working with my plate right here. Good thing I have the clamshell closed on this new MacBook Pro, or it would already be inoperable. So I was going to compare this to the fancy little mechanism on the watch that expels the water. Like, you know, you hit the button and it uses speakers, you know, it does that speaker thing to expel the water out of your watch.
They call it an impeller.
So you could do the same sort of type thing with the keyboard. I mean, they've got little bladders, but same sort of thing where it expels anything that could get down in there, you know, like moisture. That'd be pretty neat.
I did have a coworker today ask me about the expelling of the water from the watch. The coworker had just gotten the watch and is like, well, how does this work? What is the deal behind this? So we took a minute and he's like, have you ever used that? I'm like, well, one time I showered and I had my watch still on, so I used it after that. But other than that, no, I don't typically go swimming with my watch.
I swam with my new one all last summer and used it quite a bit, you know, here at the pool at the apartment. Basically, I had the watch still on so I could DJ from the pool. Remember we talked about that? Like I was switching music with my watch from the pool. That was
back when Jim actually used his watch for something other than telling the time.
Yes. I was DJing from my watch in the pool. So I used it then. So there we go. That'll be soon here in the next, you know, month or two. We'll be back in the pool.
DJ Timex in the house.
Spinning records on his watch.
Don't they make that
fair?
Don't they make that DJ app for the watch as well? The same one that they make for the iPad and the Mac and all that. I wonder if
that would be so cool if I could do that horn sound like Brad just made. Like I'm playing music and I could do the horns, or you know, wiggity 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 whack or something. Throw that in there.
Waiting for the bass to drop.
Okay, dubstep.
That'll be your step gym. That'll be your homework for the next episode. So what do you guys think of the new Spike Jonze-directed HomePod ad? Have you guys seen it? What do you think?
I do like all the trippy walls and the way it kind of stretches the room. And I guess that's to be an example of how it's adaptable to different room sizes or whatever.
I thought it was really cool. I'm a huge FKA Twigs fan. I've always loved her stuff from like when 2 Weeks came out a couple of years ago, just up until now. It's all really good stuff. And then Anderson, I guess you say Pock?
Pock.
Is it Pock? I don't know that I'd heard him a whole lot, but the song is really cool that they use for the commercial. And I did not realize that was a Apple exclusive until you posted that link and was reading the story that song is exclusively available on Apple Music. But it's a cool song. And, you know, and the video's pretty neat.
Yeah, the song was interesting. I was not familiar with that artist, and that got me to go check out their work because I really liked the song. So that was at least a nice thing. And speaking of HomePods, Jason is back in the HomePod fold. So he was ready to kick Amazon out. Now he's back on the HomePod train. What the hell's going on over there, man?
In the words of Doc Holliday, apparently my hypocrisy knows no bounds. So I'm so sick of the Amazon devices just picking up randomly throughout the day. All I really use them for is activating home automation stuff, Siri does a great job. It's so much faster at doing it than either the Google Assistant or the Amazon Assistant. I haven't ever tried Cortana. I don't know if even Cortana interfaces with the devices that I have. But there was a one-day only special that was a 20% off discount from a specific vendor on eBay. They had 400 white ones.
The discount was eBay wide, so it wasn't just for that vendor. It was everybody. Everybody.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Well, was it really?
Yes.
Well, so anyhow, the only vendor that had a bunch of them in stock with a buy now and a quick ship, total after shipping and everything was $272 to the house, which it was $373 when I purchased it. Originally with tax from Apple, so saving $101.
Nice
to be able to get a device back that I really liked, but predominantly returned because of the money factor. I have high hopes that we will see some really cool stuff coming out of WWDC that is going to really kind of open up the HomePod's functionality.
I sure hope so.
I'm ready for new AirPods. I love my AirPods, but I've been using them for over a year now, or right at a year, right in that time frame. And I feel like the batteries are just finally starting to wear down on me a lot quicker during the day than they used to, as far as doing calls. Maybe I'm just spending more time on calls. I don't want to go spend $150 on a new pair when I think there's something better coming out here really soon. I don't know. There's been a lot of rumors that there's a newer, version coming out. So it's been over a year since the original ones were announced and went on sale. So typical Apple would be that there's something new coming. I love them so much. I want another pair.
You need to get some of those new Beats with the W1 so you can DJ from your watch.
There we go. So Brian, you got some new AirPods /
Yes, since the last time we talked, my Black Pods have come in, and I like them a lot. The one thing that I didn't expect, I guess it's to be expected, is the glossy paint really makes it so that they're very slick. So getting them out of the case is a little bit of a challenge sometimes, more so than with the regular just plain white AirPods. That's probably the only negative that I've seen. They did a really good job on the AirPods themselves. The case looks really good too. But I really like the level of detail they did on the AirPods. They don't paint the inside of the case for obvious reasons. I do wish they had done the inside lid of the case, but it's still very, very good. And to your point too, the battery life has been great on the new ones because I've never used them. So
yeah, I don't even remember having this issue before. So that's why I was thinking, it's got to just be that they're a year old and they've been in it. They're either constantly charging or constantly discharging. So, just that happens with batteries, and the batteries in them are so small to begin with.
I will say that I've used mine every day for about 15 months, the normal white ones. And if I'm doing calls, I'm lucky if I get an hour's worth of phone time out of them before I start hearing the little powering down
yep.
Charge.
That sound is very familiar to me these days.
However, if I'm just listening to music, they last, 2-3 hours, no problem. With probably more than 2 hours, at least three, before I hear that. So I don't know. They're still holding up pretty well. It's just I don't think if you spend a lot of time on the phone like we do, I don't think they're really ideal for that. If I'm using it to talk to somebody like my wife on her 40-minute commute home or something, not so bad, right? It's just fine, no problems, even after 15 months. But if I were to have to talk on a 2-hour conference call, then halfway through I'm gonna have to do the little switching game. I will say if you want something other than white AirPods, Black Pods I got no problem with. I really wish they did other colors. They could really give Colorware a run for their money because their prices are more affordable than Colorware. It's just their options aren't very broad, right? It's black or black. So I would have liked to have the matte black. I don't think they would have had the slickness issue that the glossy have, but that's purely speculation.
Still sounds cool. And I agree. I just think the nature of my job has changed over the last year where I'm doing a lot more back-to-back calls or just a lot more work calls. Even when I'm traveling, my main client is still in another state from where I'm working, so we're on calls there. And we generally try to do them in a conference room, but a lot of times if there's not one available, we're just all at our desk still on, headphones. So
my number one headphones when I'm on those long calls are the old-style 3.5-millimeter earbuds, ear pods, I guess. and I plug them directly into my Mac. And since most of my calls are done from WebEx, it's just I call from computer. So I don't even bring my phone into the process at all. I'm just doing it, you know, over voiceover IP through WebEx. And, you know, if the Mac that I had a lightning jack, I would be using the lightning version of that. But, you know, not so bad for, you know, I don't mind since I'm the real convenience of using the AirPods is that you're not chained to one location. But if I'm on a conference call, I'm typically chained to one location. So I don't really see it as a trade-off to have to use those in place of the AirPods.
When I'm working from home, one thing I truly love about the AirPods is I can get on a call and just kind of walk around my living room, and I'm not just sitting in front of the computer, especially if it's a call where we're not, there's, you know, not a whole lot of screen sharing going on, or either I know, you know, what's on the screen, so I don't have to be necessarily looking at it. I love just getting up and walking around when I'm on the phone. I actually feel like I even think better, like as I'm just walking around the house. You know, I've got like a fidget in my hand, and I'm walking around and I'm talking on the phone, and I'm, you know, just doing the consulting. You know,
I hear you. Let's see. We have other stuff we could talk about, but none of it's really that's great. So I think this is probably a good stopping point for this week. Unless you guys have anything you want to bring up that we haven't discussed yet.
Just want to do a little follow-up. The case that I got from my phone that the 12 South.
The wraparound wallet thingy.
The wraparound wallet case. I've really enjoyed it. I've had it on the phone all the way until today. And today I finally swapped it because I was going to go riding on the bike. So I took it off because I wanted to put my phone in the bike holder. Case, but I'll probably end up putting it back on there. I keep a driver's license and my one credit card that I put everything on for the points in there, and it's just super convenient just to just grab my phone and go. I don't have to grab anything else. This weekend I was going to go shopping, so I've got a wallet that, you know, I keep all the other cards in, and, you know, I grab that for that trip. But otherwise, if I'm doing anything downtown, I just grab my phone and go. It's got, you know, exactly what I need in it. It's holding up really well. It is kind of annoying if I want to go take a picture and I, you know, it's kind of folded around. I'm like, oh, I've got to pull it out and, you know, kind of hold it like that to take a picture because the back is covered, you know, if you've got it folded around. But that's the only time that it really annoyed me. And once I got used to, you could actually change the volume even with the cover on, because there's kind of notches on the side that line up to the volume buttons. So you could still change the volume with the front cover closed. Once I got used to, because I kept opening it up to change the volume, and I was like, no, I don't, you know, don't need to do that. So that's been pretty nice. I recommend it to anybody that's looking to carry, you know, one or two cards around with them. Have a little stand built into your case. It's super light. It's got a whole lot of utility for still being able to have this beautiful iPhone 10 device, you know, mostly naked in your hand, you know, as you're using it. It's less of a case than most cases are, but you actually, you know, end up with a front cover and something to carry a couple of cards in. So,
see, I just couldn't get past the fact that I have to pull something off the screen to use my phone. That would just, I don't know. I don't know how I could deal with that. That doesn't bother you at all?
I thought it would more than it has, and I've kind of gotten used to it. It does the automatic locking, kind of like an iPad would, where it automatically locks when you close the cover. So it's got the magnets in the thing to where it actually automatically locks your phone when you close the cover. So that's pretty neat. And just so I kind of brain farted on this a second, it's the Surface Pad is what the case is called from 12 South, and we'll get a link in the show notes for that. I actually got an email from 12 South today, and they're like, hey, tag us, you know, on Instagram or you know, Twitter or whatever with your gear, and, you know, we might feature you or, you know, something like that. I thought that was like, you know, basically like, hey, you know, we know you just ordered some stuff from us, you know, post about it and maybe we'll, you know, share you. So
very, very interesting. I'm going to post a link in the chat here and I'm going to post it in the notes. See, that's the only type of thing that I could picture myself being able to stand to use as a wallet case, because it would keep everything on the back. But then that would destroy my Qi charging, so.
Yeah, my daughter has one of those spec wallet cases.
Only because I wouldn't want to compromise or have the open the screen. But no disrespect to 12 South. I love 12 South stuff.
All right, so that's another one that I've had that is similar to that one. But again, since it's got the cards on the back, you wouldn't be able to do the charging. But I really like that case, too. It's really meant for just one card. And the review that I got that off of, it was a cheap case off Amazon. the guy wanted it because he could carry his subway pass with his phone. And so, I mean, that was just always with his phone and not necessarily with his wallet. And so I could totally see the utility there. This case, it's really only meant to, I would say, carry one card on the back. You could put two in there. It's a little tight, but to me, it's a one card case if you just wanted to have that.
I always like the fact I have to badge into my office when I go in and out, and having my NFC badge inside of my phone case was always an awesome way to do that without having to pull my wallet out. So I kind of like that. But yeah, I mean, I can see both ways. Do you find yourself using your Qi charging a lot, Jim?
I have it set up on my desk at home, and I have another one set up on my desk at work. I do find myself using them. I also find myself wondering, is this thing actually working? Because it just seems to charge so slow.
Because you didn't get the fast charger. You got like the cheap charger. You got the one that does 5 watts.
I think the one I have at home is supposedly a 7 watt. Maybe I need to. I'll look at it. But the one I have at work, I know it was a cheaper one, and so that's why I ended up bringing that one and just leaving it at work. And then so I have this one at home. Yeah, but neither one of them seem like they charge as fast as I would like.
My ideal use case for those things are on the nightstand. So overnight charging while you sleep, it's perfect because you don't have to futz around with getting the lightning cable. You don't have to worry about, oh, is it in the right place? You can just sit it there and go. And the fact that it goes slower than a physical connection isn't really a downside because you won't really care, because at a minimum, you're going to sleep several hours. I found that when I'm on calls or I'm doing something like that it basically just keeps the phone from getting any less dead, but charging it up doesn't seem to go, as you said, very fast at all, unless you're using one of the fast chargers, in which it's much more tolerable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like putting an iPad Pro on a 5-watt charger.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll get the job done, but not very well.
I've got a cable stuck in a, you know, like a 4 USB hub thing on my nightstand. It might make sense to just move this in there, because I think it would probably do me better, just like you're saying, just using it at night, plugging my, if I need to, I can plug my phone into my my super fast iPad charger here on my desk. So
I do find myself using the fast chargers. As a matter of fact, about a week ago, I went out and bought another one of the Anker 29 watt power supplies and a USB-C to lightning cable. So I have one that's permanently like on my bar at home that both my wife and I share. And this one is in my backpack. So wherever I go, I can do some fast charging independent of the battery, which also does fast charging. So it was a worthwhile purchase. Anker makes some good stuff. Well, I'm thinking that's about it for this week, gentlemen. What about you?
Sounds like a wrap to me.
Fair, fair, fair.
I couldn't make that noise. That's perfect, Brad.
I think the next time that we...
I have a lot of practice. I do it a lot at home.
Next time we record, I'm actually just going to get us the soundboard app, and I'll just have that in there. And every once in a while, we'll just drop that in the call while we're doing it.
Brian's going to go full Opie.
Where's the car crash noise?
My inspiration is that company Christmas Party or whatever it was called.
Office Christmas movie. Party, yeah.
Yeah. And it's got the assistant from Veep on it, and he plays some kind of nerdy sort of exec. But when the party starts, he DJs at the party, and he just goes fair, fair, fair into the microphone.
If I could spell that sound, it would be the show title this week.
That's an onomatopoeia.
It is, and I believe your grandma used to make that along with the broccoli in the pot. It sounds like so. All right, gentlemen, that's a wrap. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idol. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.